Well, welcome to Keys to the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and I'm sliding into the show just at the last minute again. It's been snowing on the desert, and today it decided to rain and melt all the snow and rain, and there's floods coming down the sides of the hill, and I walk the sheep all the way back from the high deserts to the home place, and got back just a little bit ago. Time to come on the show. And we've done a couple shows this morning on prayers and plans and patterns. And when I was bringing the sheep back, when I first walked into the field, and, you know, this is miles out on the desert, and now they've seen me all the time, but I happen to have the dog with me this time, Border Collie. And he's walking behind me. He's healing. He's not running out ahead or anything. And they saw that dog. And we've had coyote and evidently wolf problems lately, and we've lost a number of sheep last year because they kept straying and these predators are coming in. But the sheep have become a little bit more spooked at the sight of anything that looks like a canine. And so they gathered up really quick, and they started heading back to where they normally go in the evening. But we're not going there. We're going all the way back to the home place. And so, fortunately, I had to run and cut them off so they didn't get there. And they eventually ran into a fence, and then I walked around them, and we headed back. And they were going pretty good. They got the idea we were going to another place. And they're walking up through the sagebrush, and they hit a road up there, a gravel road, and they usually just walk right down that gravel road. Well, just before they got to the gate, somebody decided to walk up into the brush, and so everybody followed them. They got off the path. They got off the road, and they decided to go up in the brush. And in that particular brush, there's some things stored there in the brush, some wood and some there's a machinery there and all this stuff. So they got on the wrong side of that, so that took them farther up into the brush. Well, eventually they come up to some rocks, and that'll take them farther up. But eventually they're going to come to another fence, and they're not going to be able to get through that fence. They're going to be trapped up there, right underneath the high rocks where the coyotes and the mountain lions hang out. And they're not going to be able to go through. They're going to be stuck there. They know where the gate is. They've been there before. But somebody decided to go off course a little bit. Somebody just, for some strange reason, decided to step off the road and walk into the brush. And somebody followed him. And somebody followed him. And and I could see it happening. But I was thinking, well, I'll hope they come back down before they go. But they kept going. And the longer I wait, the farther up they're going to get. So I was actually on another road, which isn't even a road, it's what we call a feed road, and I had to go and get the truck and come back, and I parked the truck near the gate, and I had to leave and walk up the mountain and cut those sheep off because they were going to just keep going up farther and farther into the rocks. And they had a head start on me, and I had to run uphill and to get around them. I didn't want to send the dog up because there was fence and there was other things there, and the sheep might get panicky and get themselves hurt. So I went up and walked right around them. I'm just a few feet away from them and say, "You guys, what are you doing up here? Turn around, go back. The gate's down there." And they look at me like, "What? Why?" Well, that's the gate. It's always been there. There's one sheep, one lone sheep, who's still down on the road. And it's starting to walk towards the gate because it knows where the gate is. They all knew where the gate was. But they decided to go off. Somebody decided. One individual decided to go off the path. And another individual followed them. And then another. And then they all started going that way because I wasn't there to steer them the right direction. Of course, I got there. I had to run up, get around them, and bring them back. Because I knew where the gate was. I knew where they were going. I knew where the safety was. And I could walk right up to these sheep within feet of them, and they're not running. They're not afraid of me. The dog's not with me, so they're not afraid of the dog, me, because there's no dog. The dog is a Border Collie, and we refer to them as black and white units. You see, when people go astray, you have to call a black and white unit. Same way with sheep. You get a black and white unit and curve them back where they're supposed to be. But I just went up and talked to them. I said, you guys, there's no gate up here. You're going to get stuck. Let's turn around, go back. And they started to. And they look at you stupid. And then they finally start turning around and they start walking down. And fortunately, they saw that other one walking through the gate and that encouraged them. And then they moved down slowly. And then they, once they got the idea, okay, we'll go down to the gate, that they were okay. I didn't have to stay with them. I could go all the way back, get the truck, and head back. And that's the way it is with people sometimes. Somebody goes off course. Somebody leaves the path. They think they're on the path. They think that they're going where they need to go. I mean, it's not malicious. It just, they are in error. And they decide to go this wrong way. And they don't realize it's wrong. But before you know it, they got somebody else following them. And then more and more. And eventually, if no one intervenes, the whole herd might follow. The whole flock will go off in the wrong direction, head for trouble. And of course, you know, like I have this picture on the wall. It shows all the sheep headed toward the cliff. And there's dozens of sheep falling over the cliff. And there's one sheep out in the middle saying, excuse me. And it's heading the other way. It's heading away from the cliff. Well, if you look out in the world today, everybody is headed towards this cliff. Now, there are people that are trying to turn around and try to go in another way, but they, in this picture up here, there's cliffs all along, all around this curve and everything. And that's what's happening, is people turn away from one cliff only to fall off another. They don't really know where to go. They need a shepherd. Yea, but for the lack of knowledge, my people would be saved. But they have to hear the voice of the shepherd. They have to recognize who's really trying to help. So that's what you have to decide, is who's a good shepherd? Who's going to show you the way? You know, when we have several web pages up on the Hammonds, who are this ranching family that's gone to jail for starting a backfire that saved thousands of acres, probably, of grass and graze. Burned a few acres of BLM, burned some of their own ground, but it stopped the fire. And it was what you should do to save that graze. And if they lose that graze, they have nothing to feed their animals, and their animals start to starve, and they have to find food somewhere else, and it's not always that easy. If you go to our webpage, it's Occupy the Refuge. It's Occupy Refuge. If you go to preparingyou.com and just search that, you'll find it. And we have another page on the Hammonds. You know, their whole case. We have links to all the court documents. We have testimony of individuals. We have interviews. We have what the government says. You know, Greg Walden, he's the government. He's saying what he knew the Hammonds for years, worked with the Hammonds for years. And he thinks that they're getting a raw deal. I can show you the judge's statements that there wasn't even $100 worth of damage. The expert's statements quoted in the court case, no damage, zero damage. Actually improved the range. Both fires. They had two fires. One fire was a regular control burn, and it worked well to get rid of invasive species. It's been done by Indians for thousands of years, done by ranchers, done by the BLM. The only difference between their fire and the BLM fire is theirs was responsibly done. The BLM fires have been known to burn up houses, fences, corrals, actually burn up live cows. They actually start fires with live cows in front of the flames and they burn them up, kill them, or half burn them so that their skin is peeling off of them. And they start the fires late in the year when everybody tells them it's too late, but no, they won't listen. You listen to Greg Walden, he'll tell you. They don't listen. because they have power corrupts. I know people in the BLM. I know people in the Forest Service, and there are some good people there. But they don't, even when they see they shouldn't do certain things, a lot of times they let it go because it's a bureaucracy. You don't want to make waves. You don't want to cause trouble. You can't speak your mind. And that's the way it is. That's the nature of those systems. That's how they operate. And so, and they become inefficient. The bigger they become, the more inefficient they become. They need to be shook up once in a while. They need somebody to come in there with a marker who could say, you know, you're fired if you don't straighten up. But that isn't really the problem. The problem goes much deeper. I mean, you can go, you know, everybody, this is an election year, big distraction year. Nobody's going to know what's going on because everybody thinks they know what's going on. They're going to vote for this guy and they're going to vote for that guy. And it's not going to make any difference. I mean, not a hill of beans worth of difference. I know you think, well, that's all we can do. We got to get another guy elected because this other guy is so bad. You know, I'm an old guy. I've seen you guys go through one election after another and nothing changes. Every year it gets worse and worse. The debt grows and grows and grows. You're more vulnerable to economic collapse. You're more vulnerable to starvation in this country than you've ever been before. As much as we produce, you could be literally starving in a matter of weeks or months in this country, all over this country. Worldwide, you don't have 30 days supply of grain in the pipeline. You should have 7 years of grain stored up. Places like China, they do store it up, but they don't store it up for everybody. They just store it up for their buddies. And to tell you the truth, your government has stored up some too, but it ain't for you. But you're just going to keep going around watching the games, you know, find out who wins, you know. Whatever, I can't even name you the team. Seahawks, whatever. And then you're going to get all worked up about politics. That dirty guy here or that rotten politician there. And, you know, this bureaucracy is overbearing and they're not paying attention to the Constitution. Well, actually, you haven't paid attention to the Constitution. Because the Constitution guarantees your right to contract. And you've contracted away access to most of your rights. If you go read the page on the, you know, the Occupy Refuge movement, that's the actual name of the page, at preparingyou.com. It'll tell you what's going on, tell you some of the motivation, tell you about how they, you know, actually we don't go a great deal into, you know, they're looking at the federal government can only own certain kinds of property. Well, they don't own the property, but that property is a surety for debt. And they can make treaties that give other countries access to the mineral rights of that property. They just got to get rid of the ranchers. Those areas are rich in minerals. Same way with Bundy's area. Actually, there's a gold mine down near Bundy that has been in a family for over 100 years, and they just condemned it and said the family has to get off. They're turning it over to somebody else to mine. Who's that? Who do you think is going to be in that mine? Well, I'll let you figure it out. The point is, the fix is in. You don't own your children. You don't own your labor. You don't own your land. And the whole system is going to collapse. Okay? Does that frighten you? Well, stop being afraid. Fear not. What you have to do is think differently. You have to rise above the commotion and confusion. You have to see what brought you to this dire straits. What brought you into this Corvey system of statutory bondage? What brought you to this vulnerable place? Now you say, well, things are going okay now. I can buy all the groceries I want in the store. I always remember a guy came to me years ago, and I still know the guy, and he could see things were going to get bad someday. And this was years ago. I mean, people have known about it for years. It is getting bad. It is getting worse. Years ago, when people came to me and asked me this question, like, well, how much acreage do you need to support a family of four? You know, and I said, well, probably about 10 acres. He thought, 10 acres, so much? Well, I said, well, it depends on the acreage, but generally speaking, that's a that's a good round number. And he says, well, I says, well, you need at least an acre or two for your garden. You have a few animals. You got to have pasture. And then you need several acres for wheat. And, or some grain. And he says, wheat? Why do I want to grow wheat? I says, to make bread. And he says, well, I can buy bread in the store. And I said, you just asked me how much ground you need to grow the food you need. And you're talking about buying the staff of life, one of the key things that you eat, in the store. I thought we were talking about when you couldn't buy it in the store. You know, that's why Rome fell, is the price of wheat, the availability of wheat. That's how the emperors rose to power, is the price of wheat. Wheat is one of those unusual grains. It could be wheat or corn or any of those types of grain that you can store well for years and years and years, and it can supplement your diet when crops fail. And so it has always been an essential ingredient to whether tyrants rise up or fall. The people don't have bread, the people don't have control, and the people don't have bread, and they don't have access to the grains that they will need to make that bread. And when they finally come down to the wire, when that happens, it'll be too late to say, oh, let's find out what Brother Gregory was talking about, and we'll do that. Too late. Too late. Unless you plan on not eating for 6 months or a year. And you can still do everything. You need to see what's coming. And you need to act accordingly. But my real motivation is to tell you, you're off the path. You're off the path of a free nation. Free nations don't operate by looking for benefits from men who exercise authority one over the other. Free nations provide those benefits through voluntary means within their society. Ancient societies would call it things like communion. The early church, communion was not a little wafer that you put on your tongue. It was actually loaves of bread during times of famine. They shared. Those that had shared with those who did not have enough. That's the words right from the minutes of the meeting in 150 AD at a church gathering. That's how they operated. Go back to John the Baptist. How does it work, John? Those who have two coats share with those who have none. Do the same with meats. You could say, do the same with bread. Charity. That's the kingdom of heaven in a nutshell. That's what you should be seeking. If you're a Christian and you've repented, you should be seeking a way to do that. To help one another through faith, hope, and charity in the perfect law of liberty. But you're not. You're trying to find out if the Seahawks won. I keep saying Seahawks. I don't know any of the other teams that I can remember. You know, whatever it is, you know, what's on TV, what's on HBO, what's, you know, you're not tending to the weightier matters. People are going to jail for years. They're getting $400,000 fines. They haven't done anything wrong that anybody can show me. They've actually should have been heroes, but they're going to jail for being a hero. But you went to church this week. Or tomorrow, or whenever, or last week. The week they went to jail, you were still recovering from New Year's Eve and Christmas. They shouldn't have gone to jail. It's unjust. It's not just. And they're not the only ones this is happening to. I've seen people with that had their kids taken away from them, on and on and on. And it's just getting worse and worse. And it's going to get, it's like, a snowball going downhill. It's going to get really, really big. It's going to go really, really fast. And it's going to destroy everything in its wake. So what do? You do what countries have done, nations have done for thousands of years when they find themselves in this stupid, precarious position. They come together and start being the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. They don't go to church for what they can get out of it. They go to church for what they can give. And they get to know who's getting. You don't go to a church with, 500 people and everybody give to one pastor and he decides who gets what. Your network. And the thing that they used to call the tunes or the tens. 10 families get together. You know who's lazy. You know who's faking it. You know who's hardworking. And you support that virtue in them. But you don't just think congregationally. You think kingdom, nationally. So you pick this minister to connect you with other people. You don't pick a minister to lead you around, by some sort of a proverbial leash, spiritual leash. Going to tell you what to believe, what to think, what to accept. He's going to interpret the Bible for you. He's going to tell you all that stuff. You're old enough to figure out what is fair and righteous. And if you're not, you shouldn't be free anyway. And so go check the ball scores. Because there's no reason to save you. You're useless. You're a useless eater. And those are going to be some of the first ones to go. But if you really care about your neighbor as much as you care about yourself, if you really care about the rights of your neighbor as much as you care about your own rights, because, everybody wants their rights. That's nothing unique. But everybody doesn't want their responsibility. And your responsibility is to care about your neighbor. That's your duty to your fellow man. So, you have to get together to find out what your neighbor needs and if you should supply it. And you can't be just interested in your neighbor, because this is a big problem. You're going to have to be interested in a whole network of neighbors. But you can't get to know them all. So you get to know a minister and you get to know his judgment. You pick him for his judgment of character. And then he gathers together with 9 other ministers like himself. And now you have 100 people that you're connected with. And then you do it another level and you have 200 or 1,000 people that you're connected with. All people that are interested in others as much as they are interested in themselves. You can find selfish people. If you want to connect with selfish people, just go down to the welfare office, go down to Social Security, go down to the public school. All those people want benefits at the expense of their neighbor. They don't care that it's going to take away from some widow or somebody who they covet their neighbor's goods. They want these benefits and they don't care if you force your neighbor to pay for them. That's okay with them. They're cannibals. They take bites out of one another every time they want a new benefit. They just bite one another. That's what one of the things that somebody was talking about, politically correct, and this is a cultural thing, and they should be allowed to do this because that's a different culture. Well, it's a different culture to be a cannibal. Is cannibalism okay? Female mutilation, that's just a different culture, right? Stoning somebody because they were raped. That's okay, right? It's just a culture thing. There's no standard. There's no morality. It's not just a culture thing. It's the difference between right and wrong. And cannibalism is not right. You shouldn't be eating people. That's just all there is to it. But every socialist eats people. Every socialist is a cannibal. Because every socialist wants to take a bite out of his neighbor to get the benefits he wants. He wants to fill his belly with the flesh and blood of his neighbor. Because his neighbor's going to have to work to pay in for his free benefit. It's a principle thing. Now, you don't want to think it in those terms, but that's the way it is. And so, as long as you think that way, you are subject to being devoured. Now, all these things that we see out in the physical world are simply a reflection of the spiritual reality that is in our own hearts. If you really have the heart of Christ, you do not want to force anybody to pay for your benefits. You just don't want to do that. So you cannot be a Christian and want that to happen. To want to have the power to force your neighbor, rich or poor, to contribute to your welfare is not something Christ would do. He does not covet his neighbor's goods. So that's very important to understand that distinction. And most people don't. So anyway, all these things that we see written about in the Bible, you know, the sheep that are supposed to be killed and set on a pile of rocks and set on fire and not supposed to make God happy, those are all metaphors. That's not what he was talking about at all. And we explain that in a number of articles. We explain the red heifer. We explain the golden calf. Golden calf had nothing to do with what you see in Cecil B. DeMille. The golden calf is the central bank. You put all your gold in that central bank, and then if the enemy attacks, you can't flee unless you flee broke. So your wealth is bound in that statue, so everybody gathers around that statue and defends it. But it's also a place where somebody can come in and defeat you and steal your statue. And of course, that's what, I mean, your gold was in Fort Knox. It's all been stolen. It's not really stolen. It's just been used up. Used up to provide you with those benefits that you want at the expense of your neighbor. You've been devoured. Your wealth has been devoured. You have nothing. But you can change that. You have to change spiritually. You have to change what you're doing spiritually. So, anyway, I wrote a page on the Temple of Jerusalem. And that's actually what it's called, Temple of Jerusalem. Temple in Jerusalem. And it's at Preparing You, so you just go there and look for that, and you'll find it. Got lots of pictures and drawings of the temple. And, you know, there are guys out there trying to rebuild the temple and going to build all the... The temple is supposed to be a living temple. That's always what it was supposed to be. But in the structure of the temple, they're giving you hints to your temple of the Holy Spirit in kind of a symbolic, metaphoric form. So you have to figure out what each of these symbols stand for. And that's something we talked about in the other two shows. But let's just take the word temple of in Jerusalem. 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 Salem. Peace. Jeru. Double. Double peace. The temple in double peace. Double peace. What double peace? Mind and body. Spirit and flesh. Double peace. You're in conformity with the ways of Christ in spirit and truth. That's what Jerusalem is. It's not a location. It's not a town. There's not a city limits. It's about being in conformity in mind and body and spirit and flesh with the character of Christ. That's Jerusalem. And the temple in Jerusalem is surrounded by this wall, this structure, you know, that goes all the way around it. The sacred enclosure. And you go up by these steps, and we talked about the 12 steps. And basically what we equated those, because this is just to enter into the outer court. It's not even the steps to enter into the inner court or into the vestibule or into the Holy of Holies. All these are symbolic references to a spiritual journey within yourself. But we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about that spiritual journey in spiritual terms and not cloak them in the symbolism of this temporal structure, which if you want to see, you can go to the website, Temple in Jerusalem at preparingyou.com, and take a look. But we'll do that when we come back after this brief break. The Lord openeth the eyes of the blind, and the Lord raiseth them up that are bowed down. The Lord loveth the righteous. This is Psalms 146:8. God's love opens your eyes. It takes the scales off your eyes. But in order to receive God's love, you must be willing to see. But if you think you see already, then Christ talks about you will be made blind. This is part of the teachings that Christ gave us. Jesus said, "For judgment I am come into this world, that they which see not might see, and they which see might be made blind." Well, he's talking about those who think they already know. And so what we're doing in these series is trying to show you what Christ was trying to help people see. And Peter would say the same thing, that through covetousness, that you would be made merchandise. You would curse your children. You would go back and become entangled in the elements of the world. That is the cause. When we talk about contracts in the world and of the world, we're simply talking about systems and agreements where you can actually see the evidence of the fact that you're already in agreement with ideas like one purse, like eating at the table of kings, benefactors who exercise authority. And they're not really benefactors. They only give you what they take away from others. These are the fathers of the earth. These are the terminologies. And we show you the history. We show you how this applied back then. We show you how it applied throughout the ages. We show you how it applied in our times today. But it is absolutely essential that you change what you are in agreement with. That's repentance. You're in agreement with the idea that it's okay to covet. It's okay to desire what belongs to your neighbor for your personal benefit. And it's okay not to forgive. Christ's love will open your eyes. But it also will be like hot coals upon the head of those who do not want to see. They will hate it. If Christ is in you, if you're coming in the name of Christ, you need to be coming with a desire to serve, to forgive, to be a righteous individual. That is your desire. And you need to act, not just say, "Lord, Lord," but actually become a doer of that word. And then His love can bless you. His grace. If you only love those who love you, if you only love those who help you, care about you, that are close to you, what grace have you? This is what it says. I want you to keep that in mind. Do not get carried away with contracts and jurisdictions and laws, etc. Keep in mind that this is about coming into agreement with Christ. And join the network. Find other people seeking the kingdom of God and His righteousness. That daily ministration based on faith, hope, and charity and the perfect law of liberty. A government that does not exercise authority but exercises love and charity and hope. And until then, peace on your house and may God be with you. Okay, welcome back. So what I talked about in the last show that I did earlier this morning was this idea of addiction to certain patterns of thought. You know, repentance is changing the way you think. You can't change the way you think. You know, one of the great delusions is that you can figure things out and solve the problem with your intellect. You can't. Because the problem is your intellect. Now, that doesn't mean to get rid of your intellect. You should have an intellect, and the more you have, the more you can. It's like having a really good set of tools. You know, I can build things with a rock and a few I can chip flint. I used to say that I could go out on the desert and survive with a herd of sheep, and all I needed was a good pocket knife. Well, since I learned to chip flint, I don't even need a good pocket knife. I can make it with the flint I find out on the desert. But a good knife is really handy. Several good knives is handy. You know, a rifle is handy. Lots of things are handy. And those are tools. And a good mind is a handy tool. But it can be manipulated by altering the facts and altering our impression of the facts, and our personal prejudices can alter the value of the facts so that we think this is more important than that. And so we can be led astray, just like those sheep that were on the road and all of a sudden they started going off the road. They were kind of going on a path, but it wasn't an actual run path. It was something different. And they were just like, they weren't quite to the gate, so they were just going off the path and nothing was bringing them back. And they were kind of creating their own path, and the sheep coming behind just followed the sheep in front, and then the whole flock was going in the wrong direction. Because you can be fooled. What you need is more intuition, more spiritual guide that is sees all, knows all kind of thing. And then you can stay on the path. And this is what I was saying about the fact that there is a good and evil. There's a good realm and a bad realm. And the good realm is trying to show you the way to survive and live and give you life. And the bad realm wants to bite you and take away your rights and take away your dominion and take away even your life and use it for their own purposes. And so how do you get near one and away from the other? Well, you have to stop taking a bite out of one another. Because every time you do that, it draws you closer to the realm that wants to devour you. Doesn't want to give you your rights. Doesn't want to give you your freedom. It wants to tell you, oh, you can do this. You're smart enough. You can figure it out. You can do this on your own. You too can be gods. You see, that's the temptation. You know, that story is a metaphor trying to tell you how it works, how this mental process of trauma and sin works. Okay, so now what draws you near the good thing, the thing that gives you life, the things that will protect you, the things that care about you? What draws you to that? Care about others. Think about others. Sacrifice for others. You see? I mean, it's not complicated. It's simple. People make it complicated so they don't have to see the truth. And therefore, they will not have peace in spirit and mind. And body. They will go astray. They will go off the path. The path of righteousness is to do righteousness to others. The path to forgiveness is to forgive others. The path to be given to is to give to others, which is to lay down what you have for others, for God's sake, and He will give you more. That's the way it works. It's that simple. So we create a network of people, 10 families, get together, pick a minister. That minister gets together with 9 other ministers like himself. He picks a minister. The minister of ministers we call a bishop. I mean, that's what they were called. Well, actually, what they were called in the Greek was episcopo. And we translate that word episcopo a couple different ways. One way bishop, one way is overseer. And all it really means is that he is a minister within ministers. He's looking out for ministers that he ministers to. He's working for Christ. He's not working for them. He's working for Christ. But in Christ's interest, he's interested in them so that they can do their job. What is their job? To connect the people that have looked to them with the rest of the network so that the kingdom is manifest by their witness, not... It's not just a congregation, it's a kingdom. And so they're telling you how that works. The problem is, you know, if you go to Titus 1, somewhere in Titus, just Titus chapter 1, verse 6. If any be blameless... Boy, that's a word we need to study. Blameless. The husband of one wife, having faithful children, not accused of riot or unruliness. For a bishop must be blameless. This overseer, this episcopo, whatever it is. See, when I say bishop, your brain jumps to what you know of as bishops in the modern church. That modern church has delivered you into bondage. It is lying to you, deceiving you, feeding the delusion in you. It's not doing what Christ did. I can show you that very clearly. And so when I say bishop, you think of those guys. No, that's not what they were doing. They were doing something. They were setting a nation free. So he must be blameless as the steward of God. Steward, he's in charge of something, right? Well, he's not in charge of the people because he can't exercise authority one over the other. He's in charge of the stuff that the people give him. And why do the people give him that stuff? To be the daily ministration of the people, for the people, by the people, so they do not have to go to the benefactors who exercise authority that bring them back into bondage. Because through covetousness, desiring the benefits of those benefactors who exercise authority, you have been made merchandise. If you had gone and gathered in a society of free will offerings, that would not be the case. But you didn't go that way. Great swelling words have enticed you to go another way. So now this bishop has to be somebody who is a steward of stuff that belongs to God, not self-willed. Not soon angry. Not given to wine, being drunk and stuff. No striker. Not somebody who's, you know, starts fights. Not given to filthy lucre. He's not interested in the money. The money isn't the big thing. But a lover of hospitality. A lover of good men. Sober, just, holy, temperate. So that's what you're looking for in your leaders. Now, these aren't rulers because they can't exercise authority. They're leaders. That's what you're looking for. You want a shepherd who's going to show up, who's holding fast the faithful word as he hath been taught, and he may be able to sound, by sound doctrine, both to exhort and to convince gainsayers. So he has to be able to explain the kingdom and how it works in a convincing way. If he can't do that, then he really shouldn't be an episcopo. Because this is really important, because he's going to be connecting your congregation with thousands of other congregations, so that in hard times you would have places to go and people to see that could help you out. Grain farmers, vegetable farmers, fruit farmers, skilled workmen can come together, and it will not only be skilled workmen, but it be men who care about others as much as they care about themselves. How do you know that? Because they gather together. Somebody told me today that so-and-so isn't gathering with us anymore because they've gotten all they can get from HHC, His Holy Church. So they're going to go off and do their own thing. So they just came to spy out our liberty, get what they could go, and then they left. They abandoned everybody else. They didn't come to help us. They came to get what they could get and go away. Now, I don't know all the specifics of it, but I know there are people like that, so it doesn't matter whether that applies 100% in that case. It applies to some. And that's very important, because they never came together with the Spirit of Christ. They're not Christians, if that's really what they were doing. And so they're not going to get the reward and the protection of grace. Protection draws subjection, and subjection to protection. That's an ancient idiom of law. If you look to the government to solve all your problems, you're going to be subject to the government, who may become all your problems. So, how does it counter that in the kingdom? Who do you look to for protection? Free will offerings, faith, hope, and charity, the perfect law of liberty, or force? If you look to force, you will not be free. If you look to do it by free will, then you might be free. But you can't just do it so that you get stuff. You have to do it so other people give stuff. So that means you have to share. If you have two coats and your neighbor has none, share. Do the same in meats. If you do that, you will move towards freedom. If you don't do that, no matter what you do, you will not be free and should not be free. So this is the spiritual reality, is that you have to come to lay down your life so that you can have life more abundant. So in the temple, you know, going back to some of those symbols that are demonstrated in this temple, you know, you have the court of the Gentile. That's on the outside. Then you have this sacred enclosure. That's like the skin. You know, the court of the Gentiles, that's your space. That's your bubble. You know, this, people get into your bubble. They're getting into the court of the Gentiles. But the sacred enclosure, that's under your skin. People getting under your skin. There's the outer court, which was a treasury court, they call it. So that's where you receive things and let things go. It's also known as the woman's court. Court of treasury, chamber of wines and oils, and contained the chamber of the Nazarite and the chamber of the lepers and the chamber of wood. All these are actually symbols of characteristics inside yourself, or compartmentalizing what's inside yourself. The court of Israel, the court of the priests, the porch, the vestibule, the holy place, the holy of holies. These are all symbolic of things that are inside you, inside your skin. And what you have to do is have the pattern of Christ in all those different chambers, and all those different patterns. That's what you're striving for. That's what you're seeking. That's what you're persevering for. But something gets in the way. Old habits. Habits to debate, habits to argue, habits to be contentious, habits to get your way, your will. And those habits keep popping up because you're addicted to them. And we went through this quite a bit. You'll have to get copies of the other show. But we went through this where you're addicted to these other patterns of thought. There's a trigger that pops up. Something happens and your brain just automatically starts going off, like those sheep going off the path. And the rest of you start going off the path. And you'll actually lead other people off the path. Because you're addicted to this, that. And I listed off a bunch of things, you know. And of course, we can put it in terms of gossiping and backbiting and isolating yourself and all these different things. But the reality is whether you put those labels on it or not, it's real. That you follow off the path with these certain triggers because you have this habit. So you have to change that. And you cannot change that on your own. But one of the things that will help you change that is to change your ways. And when you try to change your ways and it's not really written on your heart, that's going to come to bear on you, and you're going to sense that and see that. And the more you see that, the more free you will become. The truth about you will set you free. The truth about Obama or Trump or Jeb Bush or any of these politicians that are running for office, the truth about that's not going to set you free. It's the truth about you that's going to set you free. And that's what that's the truth you need to be a part of. So I also worked on the minister's page. And so all those symbols, we'll get into all those symbols eventually and what they all stand for and how they relate inside you. But there's absolutely no reason to tell you now, because I'm only going to be telling your intellect. We want to talk to the spirit. You know, that's one of the things in exercising demons, which is a real thing. Doesn't happen all the time, it actually happens more often than you think, because all demons don't, you know, look like the demon in Exorcist. You don't have to get that bad to be influenced by demons. But whether you want to call them demons or entities or spirits or ideas, or somebody just says, like, boy, that idea really got a hold of him. Well, that's the spirit of that idea that's got a hold of him. And it possesses him, and it controls him, and it manipulates him, and it takes him off in another direction. And he can't stop. How to get to that point where you can be defending yourself against that, where you're putting on the full armor, where you will not be seduced or deluded or taken off the path. How do you get to the point of seeing that? And I talked about where the Bible says to study to quiet your mind. Well, that just almost is paradoxical. How do you study, use your brain to quiet your brain? To be still and know. You know, not try to solve the problem and just know the answer. How do you do that? Well, you have to become quiet. You have to become still inside your heart and in your mind. And every time you try to do that, something's going to interfere. Something's going to get in the way. And so really, I can't teach you all these things over the radio. But the delusion is so strong. Pure religion is taking care of the needy of the world, the needy of your society, without using constitutional orders and systems of government. That's what is defined as in the Bible. You don't use systems that collect taxes by force to help the needy, or you will be brought under the power of force. You will be brought under a dictator. That's, as long as you look to government to solve your problems, you will always suffer tyranny. The same thing, saying the same thing as what pure religion is. If you want to be free, you must set your neighbor free. If you want somebody to care about your rights, you have to care about their rights as much as you care about your own. That's just the way it works. I can't change that. That's just how it's built into the system. So elders were just heads of family, altars of clay. Ministers were altars of stone. These are all symbols that we see going through there. So what we're offering is people who want to learn the mysteries of the kingdom. We have an article on that, but it's not going to tell you all. If you want to understand those, if you want to be a part of that, if you want to dedicate yourself to that, we are willing to start training people. One of the ways to do that is to gather together in congregations that are already existing, and those congregations work on getting more congregations, and you have to do more and more charitable work so that people see that it really is to our advantage to join these groups. But of course, they're not really joining unless they also contribute. You know, most churches always have half a dozen people or a small group of people that are really working in the church, and everybody else just kind of shows up. At His Holy Church, just showing up ain't gonna cut it. That don't work for me. You have to form these congregations, and it doesn't matter how far apart you are at first. You just keep forming them and trying to find more and more people, get the word out. Start really helping, so people say, hey, you know, that made sense. Those guys really, they paid our medical bill. They helped us out. They sent somebody when I was hurt and helped us out. We're doing that. We're not doing it as much as we need to do it, but we're doing that. People are beginning to see that. But a lot of other people want to be contentious and argue about this, that, and the other thing. Not going to argue. We already know what the path is. I'm not going to argue with those sheep that want to go up the side of the mountain where the coyotes and the mountain lions and bobcats. I'm just going to stand there and say, don't go that way. You know, I always tell the story of the sheep that kept running away. One sheep, it was a fairly young lamb. You know, it was big. You know, 50, 60, maybe 80 pounds. And it kept running off. And I'd have to run all the way up the mountain and get around it. And, you know, I didn't have a dog then, and bring it all the way back. And I did it again, second time. And I brought it all the way back, and then all of a sudden it just got panicky and it ran off again. Third time it ran off, I just waved goodbye. I had to leave the sheep every time to go get that sheep. It was just like it was possessed. There's always these events that are always telling me something. And that was so interesting. Those sheep all knew where the road was. They knew where the gate was. They're headed straight towards the gate. And all of a sudden, somebody happened to be near the lead, decided to go off the path. They had to go up over a little hill to get out of the road. And they chose to do that. There's no grass there. There's no feed there. But there's something just led them astray in their own mind. No, it wasn't malicious. Wasn't evil. They just led astray. And they didn't listen to the sheep shepherd calling them. They just kept going up there. And, I should have caught it sooner, maybe. But by the time I realized they were off the path, I couldn't quite see the road because I was down in another place way down a hill. I thought they were on the road. And then all of a sudden I realized they're not on the road. They're up in the brush. I didn't see the road. I couldn't see the road from where it was. I could just see the tops of their backs. But they'd gone up in the brush. They weren't going to hit the gate. They were going to be lost. Lost sheep on the desert. So I had to stop everything and run all the way up there and get around them and say, "What are you doing?" And they came back. And they finally went through the gate. But in the other case, the sheep, he just went off. I never saw him again. So I don't know whatever happened to him. One lone sheep out on the desert. I mean, it was just running. Running miles. And I wasn't young. I wasn't old then, but there's a limit to how much I could run. So it just killed itself because it wanted to leave. And it's free to do that, I guess. And that's what people have to do. They have to, okay, you're not learning anymore. Are you giving more? Are you helping more? Because that's the only way to get grace, to love others, whether they love you or not. You come there to be there for them, not to go there so that they can be there for you. That's not the character of Christ. Then when you gather together, you have to start being of value to everybody, not only in your congregation, but in your community. It's hard when you're spread out, but that's actually, there's an advantage now, because when you give and you cast your bread upon the waters, it's always casting it upon the waters, because it's really not for your little local congregation, padding your own little bed. You're actually caring about people far off. And this will bring grace to you. Your eyes will open up. Scales will fall off. You will see more. If you go the other way, if you go astray from the ways of Christ, you will see less. Your eyes will be darkened because you say you see, and you will see less. And you'll have health issues, and you'll have all kinds of problems. Hopefully you'll repent and return to the path. But this, I've seen this time and time and time again. If you go off, it gets worse than ever. And Christ told us that. So how do you clean out all those little dark rooms in the temple of the Holy Spirit, which is you? That's what we were talking about, the 12 steps. And we talked about it in the last show. We'll probably talk about it again. And unfortunately, we can't talk about it today because we're out of time. But join us on the network. If you're interested in the ministry, join us on the network and say so. There are people willing to help you. We got people moving through Arizona and on their way to Texas to help you. They're self-contained. They're not going to be a burden. They come to help. All you have to do is ask, and you shall receive. Until then, peace on your house, and may God be with you. God bless.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.